This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Like most writers, Greg Cusick has a day job, only his day job is night work. He's a bartender. So, as you can imagine, he hears a lot of stories. And as you might fear, if you're one of Greg's regulars, a lot of those stories might end up in his fiction. He's just published a number of short stories, and he's now out with his first collection. It is called My Father Moves Through Time Like a Dirigible. And it's a collection of short stories that explore our emotional connections to our own stories of love, loss, and humor. Greg's going to be reading at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham Monday at 7 o'clock, Scuppernong Books in Greensboro next Thursday at 7. But first, he joins us on The State of Things. Greg Cusick, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
Last time we spoke, you had just won the Laurie and Hemingway Short Story Award. Now you have a collection. Were these stories mostly written by then, or have you been working on them since
the last couple of years? Mostly written by then, although, yeah, there's several that are newer. Mm-hmm. So over time.
These stories really explore the nature of narrative and storytelling, don't they? I mean, it seems to me that that's a big theme that runs through many of these stories, or at least the first story.
Mm-hmm. And how a story is told, I guess, and how the how memory works with the same event being remembered and viewed by different people too. Yeah,
it's sort of a remarkable thing to take a picture in my head and get it to project in your head using whatever, whether it's the written word or the spoken word. And so, really, you're in a sense we're accessing memories that are already in the other head, right? And
right.
You've got to use the imagery that was honest about kind of what I saw and get it going. I mean, that to me is a miracle. That's a wonderful thing. And it's the thing you reflect. Maybe I could get you to read from the title story, My Father Moves Through Time Like a Dirigible. You might want to set it up for us.
Sure, sure. So the setup is it's an old man, 83 years old, who's sitting in a middle school principal's office pitching a play idea to the principal about, he says it's about history and time, but it's about an event when he was 4 years old in 1925, an actual event, the dirigible Shenandoah passed over his house, and his father called the kids out and pointed up to the sky that the blimp was passing over, and it's a vivid memory that the now old man keeps remembering and wants to recreate in the form of a middle school play. So here he's just talking to he's sitting in a 13-year-old's chair and pitching to the principal, whose name is Constantine. So remember that I said that it begins and ends and begins and ends and begins again. I realize for a moment now that I may be repeating myself, but each version's different, yes? And I only humbly wish to make the point that we're all, every one of us, full of fact and fiction. The waitress before me now may not even believe I was shot down over Germany in 43, and hell, maybe I wasn't. And just as much, I mean, it depends, as I may have said, on one's point of view, where one places one's tripod and starts and stops the camera rolling. And see how perspective talk leads us around, back, right back to time? And of course, it's Buddy, the great manipulator of time, memory. Memory that can leap forward and backward minutes, months, decades in a single bounds that only takes seconds. On the next visit, or perhaps the previous one, I say to Constantine, like a kid, one whose tiny frame would fit this chair I'm in, did I tell you it was really all about time, that is, time and memory? His look is both pensive and somehow patronizing. Does he want me out of here? Is he comprehending my pitch, my theme? That is, either he's thinking of time or of how to ask me to leave without offending me. His comments can be taken at various levels of seriousness. Right, he says to me, in a tone impossible to read, about time, he finishes. I'm thinking he definitely italicized that time there. Interesting, he says.
That is Durham author Greg Cusick reading from his first collection, and that is the title story of this collection, My Father Moves Through Time Like a Dirigible. Greg's going to be reading at the Regulator Bookshop Monday at 7 o'clock, and then it's Scuppernong Books in Greensboro next week. the way he plays with this notion of time, I don't know if it's giving too much away to say that he saw that blimp fly by at his father's insistence. That blimp came to a kind of a bad end shortly after that, and that was part of the story, part of the memory.
Right, right. So it was just hours after this boy would have seen the blimp pass that the Shenandoah did crash, and it was not a Hindenburg type crash because it was a helium filled blimp, so it just hit and crashed and tumbled into pieces, and many were killed, but many of the staff.
And our narrator has a way of including this and taking some responsibility for this in a way children will, right? Taking responsibility for the crash.
Exactly. In the principal's office, he reflects that he feels responsible for the crash of the blimp because he had seen it beforehand. And he also feels some responsibility for his father, who left the family just months after that. So it's got different responsibilities.
Yeah, no, it's a kind of an amazing thing. And I guess that's the theme that we were talking about earlier, this sort of crazy notion of the story. Who are we? You know, do we have a national story? What do we say about ourselves? Are we exceptional as a nation? Well, if you exclude a lot of voices, we are. If you include them all, like, it's a very complicated story. Where do you start? Where does the story end? Does it end with my father pointing at the blimp, or does it end somehow an hour later? And what role did I play in all of that? It's a beautiful way of trying to get at that. We mentioned the fact that you are also a bartender when mm-hmm. you're not writing, and you hear lots and lots of stories. We had fun with the idea that, you know, I could be sitting across the bar and find myself between the pages of one of your short stories someday. Do you do that? And was this story, for instance, did this story come from anything that you heard on the other side of the bar?
Yes, absolutely. This story did. I did deal with an old gentleman who, for some years, who would come in the restaurant and tell stories. He was a pilot, retired pilot, and Faulkner scholar, and just a kind of eccentric character. But he told the story when he was a boy that he still recalled, yeah.
How much a part, repetition played an important part in this story and some of the others. How do you see repetition, sort of what, its role in narrative?
Well, I think, repetition is very important. And in the repeating of a vision or a view or a memory, the way it changes over time is something you can look at. I know in poetry, repetition is very important, and if you change a word, you in the second repeating, you notice it. And I guess that's something I kind of subconsciously was working on.
It's kind of two questions, because one, you think about repetition as a craft. How does it work to make it better as a short story? How does repetition work to make my poem better as a poem? But also in narrative, it is what we do. There's a lot of repetition that goes on in this story as well. The narrator himself is trying to, you almost feel him trying to make sense of the story by telling it over and over again. It's not as though he's addled. I mean, this really is not a sign of dementia on his part, because he keeps going back over this thing. In a way, there's a piece of the story that's missing. I mean, the repetition is itself an element in the story. It's not just a device to get mm-hmm. me to remember a thing. It's an element in sort of how the mind constructs a story. Do you think?
I agree. Yes. I think for this character and all of us, in his vision, in his play, he sees the plywood blimp going across the stage, and he sees it as time passing across the stage, and his father moving through time like that blimp. The idea that he's continuing to deal with this, all the events of his life, but these principal ones that are so important. I think you're right. He doesn't quite know how to deal with that.
And in a way, it's sort of the miracle and also the sorrow of art, isn't it, that we can, on the one hand, put a frame around a set of experiences within a certain time, you know, from here to here, these things happened that I recall, I can make that a story. Better yet, let's make it a play so everybody can see the story or turn it into a short story. On the other hand, letting go is the advice of a lot of the great mystics and sage of our, you know, our time, and saying, no, just go with that. Don't try to frame it up. Don't try to put it together. You'll only hold yourself back. I mean, so in some ways we heal ourselves by being able to frame and tell a story. On the other hand, isn't that sort of part of our part of the problem, is that we can't let go of this silly story that we've been telling about ourselves?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah.
It's one of the things that you handled, I think, beautifully in the story. Let me get you to read another one to kind of illustrate some of what's going on. This story is different in style and type. You can tell us a little bit about balance.
Sure. Balance is a kind of relationship story. And I got the idea that some years back, a newspaper article about a woman who shoots her husband. And it kind of struck me that that serious event wouldn't necessarily have to be a detrimental one for their relationship, and that all relationships are, well, successful relationships, it seems, have a certain balance or equilibrium to them. And if things become out of balance, then there are problems in the relationship. So this is a This is Bonnie and Harold. Ever since she shot her husband, Bonnie has felt better about the relationship. First, of course, because he'd survived, a fortunate outcome she'd been in no way sure she wanted until after she'd fired the shots. And in fact, after the 7 months of recovery, it was the bullet to the back of his thigh that still bothered him. Not the two in the chest, frontal, or the two that pegged his midsection as he turned his sometimes sorry, sometimes irresistible ass to her and stumbled down the front steps into the yard. The point in Bonnie's mind is that some kind of equilibrium has been restored.
Balance is one of the stories in the collection My Father Moves Through Time Like a Dirigible. We're talking with author Greg Cusick today on The State of Things. All right, is this not one of the great first sentences of all time? Ever since she shot her husband, Bonnie felt better about their relationship. I love, and it goes on from there. And it's a beautiful relationship that the two of them have. And it's hard to identify with them. I mean, they seem to be a little on the other side of the law now and then. How did this so there was an article that you read. I'm assuming that the newspaper article didn't put the wife in such a kind of a glorified position. So how did you turn that? And did it come to you right away? No, wait, they've got it wrong?
In thinking about relationships in general and the balance idea, I think they kind of came together at once, that this would be a fun challenge to see if what appears to be so dire is maybe the best thing that happened to them.
Well, let's pursue this a little bit. You've got this idea, this sort of emotional relationship, which is an abstract idea coming from a very concrete, you know, tangible medium like a newspaper. When do the details come to you? How do they come to you? Do you have to write, rewrite, or do the details in the story start to present themselves pretty quickly?
Good question. I think every story is different.
Well, what about this one? I'm asking about this one.
In this one in particular. Yeah. Most of my stories I consider character-centered or character-focused. So I had these characters in mind and then, in this case, kind of just invented a history for them to explain how the initial the shooting turned out to be a good thing.
I mean, did that come to you sort of right away? I mean, once I have to frame this relationship as balanced and not pathological, this must be how they relate to each other. This must be what they do. I mean, they could be rich or poor. They could be driving. I mean, you have the car that they were driving, the fact that it's a stick-on clock. I mean, so there's a lot of little details. And I just wonder if those come to you one at a time or if you suddenly say, this is that couple. Here's what they look like. Here's what they're driving.
Yeah, so I get to know them a little bit and a feel for the way they talk, the way they dress, what car they might drive, that sort of thing. And then and then just write the scenes, and those details hopefully come.
You've written a lot of short stories. Do you prefer short stories to novels? Do you try your hand at novels, and do you prefer one or the other?
I have tried my hand at novels, and I've written two novels that are as yet unpublished, and I've gotten in general some very respectful declines, mm-hmm. I just always find myself coming back to stories.
Do you prefer one? Would you like to move into novels, or are you just happier writing short stories?
I think the novel is such a such an endurance test, and I'm not really the kind of writer that can sit down every day and do it for a certain amount of time. But when I was writing the novels, I was pretty good at that, and so I liked the. I like the discipline of that, but stories are more fun to me.
It's nice to get to the end, isn't it? I mean, that's the deal when you're working. It's like to say, I'm glad this is over, and I'm glad there's not another 3 months of this stuff. Well, Greg, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Greg Cusick, the author of the new collection of short stories, My Father Moves Through Time Like a Dirigible, going to read at the Regulator Bookshop in Durham Monday at 7 o'clock, Scuppernong Books in Greensboro next Thursday at 7. If you missed that, or even if you got it, you can still go to our website, stateofthings.org, and find out much, much more. State of Things produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Alex Curley is our intern, Robin Copley, our technical director, Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.